Hello, my name's Dave Emery. This is For the Record program number 316, Side A. This is being recorded on July 22nd of the year 2001. It's titled, Update on the Politics of SV40. This broadcast is supplemental to a number of programs that have been done before, and front and center in this line of analysis dating back to 1996 is the remarkable research of Ed Haslam, the author of the vitally important recent book Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, subtitled The Story of an Underground Medical Laboratory, published in softcover by the Wordsworth Press, and copyright 1995. There have been some other editions of that book, and we're going to be accessing some information later on in the program from the third edition from 1997. We've talked about the politics of SV40 most recently in an update for the record program number 308. Ed Haslam, in his aforementioned book Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, has developed a line of analysis that is as important as it is complex. And this is an analysis which links a cancer-causing monkey virus called SV40 or simian virus 40, which contaminated the polio vaccine and possibly other vaccines in the 1950s and 1960s as well, with a number of things ranging from a cancer epidemic, both soft tissue and in some research that has been conducted by other researchers, some solid tissue cancers as well. And this in turn has been connected to the milieu of the assassination of President Kennedy. I'm going to do the best I can to give people a rough picture of how those connections play out. I would refer interested listeners to For the Record program number 19. That is a 3-hour interview done in 6 half-hour segments that I did with Ed Haslam in the spring of 1996, in which we cover his original book, the original edition of his book in exhaustive detail. Let me stress that this is a very complex line of analysis and also one that to be understood completely requires a certain degree of scientific and medical expertise, so it's not the easiest thing in the world to understand. I will do the best I can with this discussion, and I think that even given the understandable limitations that most listeners would bring to this discussion, I think the overriding significance of what Ed Haslam has come across and the research that other researchers have done that supplements what Ed Haslam has done, it would be difficult to exaggerate the importance of this. A lot of people say, well, I'm not into politics, I don't care about politics, what relevance does that have for me? And the fact of the matter is that people may not be into politics, but politics, in this case, in the form of a cancer-causing viral contaminant in vaccines, may very well be into them. So the line of analysis that we're going to be developing connects a cancer epidemic that is currently taking place and being downplayed with a cancer-causing monkey virus that contaminated the polio vaccine and that was administered to approximately 98 million Americans. And in turn, viral contaminant, research into that, and a number of outgrowths of that research is connected to the milieu of the assassination of President Kennedy and Jim Garrison's investigation in New Orleans. And again, I'm going to touch on the highlights of that discussion as best I can later on in the program. I refer interested listeners to Ed Haslam's book, or, failing that, For the Record program number 19, a 3-hour interview in 6 half-hour segments with Ed Haslam and a number of supplemental broadcasts as well, specifically For the Record programs numbered 62, 63, and 76, as well as other broadcasts dealing with SV40. All of those programs are interviews with Ed Haslam. I would also note that the politics of SV40 is the major focal point of For the Record programs 198 and 199. That information, in turn, accessing material published in the Atlantic Monthly of February of the year 2000. Last Sunday, specifically Sunday, July 15th, the San Francisco Chronicle ran a long article about SV40 and the what the author viewed as the probable cancer-causing effects of this virus. And this was run on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle. It occupied most of the front page from that day, Sunday, July 15th of 2001. And in turn, the article occupies 2 full pages on the inside of the Chronicle's edition of 7/15/2001. I'm going to excerpt that article, and then I'm going to excerpt a follow-up article in today's San Francisco Chronicle, and today, for the benefit of people listening on tape, is Sunday, July 22nd of the year 2001. This article is by William Carlson, C-A-R-L-S-E-N, of The Chronicle. It's headlined, Rogue Virus in the Vaccine, subtitled, Early Polio Vaccine Harbored Virus Now Feared to Cause Cancer in Humans. And this information largely overlaps the discussion in For the Record programs 198 and 199, in turn accessing an article in the February 2000 edition of the Atlantic Monthly by Debbie Bookshin and Jim Schumacher, the authors of a follow-up article, not a direct follow-up article, but a similar article that was carried in the July 2001 issue of Penthouse magazine. I excerpted that article in the aforementioned For the Record 308. I'm going to excerpt it briefly in the second half of this broadcast. William Carlson's article, Rogue Virus and the Vaccine, reads in part as follows. A growing number of medical researchers fear that a monkey virus that contaminated polio vaccine given to tens of millions of Americans in the 1950s and 1960s may be causing rare human cancers. For four decades, government officials have insisted there is no evidence the simian virus called SV40 is harmful to humans. By the way, later on in this program, we're going to take a look at the curricula vitae of a couple of the key National Institute of Health officials who have been downplaying the significance of SV40. They, interestingly enough, overlap directly and are part of the milieu of Dr. Alton Oxner, who in turn was the driving force behind the Information Council of the Americas, a private right-wing intelligence service with connections to the intelligence community, and it was Inca who staged the interview with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans in the summer of 1963, in which he proclaimed his communist sympathies. That interview was broadcast all over the United States the evening of President Kennedy's murder and shortly thereafter. And it went a long way to convincing people that the communists may have killed President Kennedy. That, in turn, motivated many liberals to downplay the notion that there was any conspiracy behind Kennedy's assassination because they were afraid that it might start a Third World War. And after returning to the article in the Chronicle of 7/15/2001, after discussing the fact that government officials have downplayed the possible cancer-causing effects of SV40, Carlson returns to the discussion. But in recent years, dozens of scientific studies have found the virus in a steadily increasing number of rare brain, bone, and lung-related tumors. The same malignant cancer SV40 causes in lab animals. Even more troubling, the virus has been detected in tumors removed from people never inoculated with the contaminated vaccine, leading some to worry that those infected by the vaccine might be spreading SV40. The discovery of SV40 in human tumors has generated intense debate within the scientific community, pitting a handful of government health officials who believe that the virus is harmless against researchers from Boston to China who now suspect SV40 may be a human carcinogen. And turning to the inside of the paper and skipping down, talking about skepticism on the part of some scientists within the National Cancer Institute, and we're going to come back to that later. By the way, Dr. Howard Strickler, the chief investigator for the National Cancer Institute, downplayed the significance of SV40. As we looked at in the For the Record program number 308, and as we're going to review, it would appear that officials within the National Institutes of Health and the National Cancer Institute, despite their official disclaimers of the significance of SV40 in relation to cancer, are in fact aware, at least to a certain extent, of their possible liability in downplaying the significance of this apparently deadly virus. Skipping down in the story, but scientists at the National Cancer Institute say their studies show almost no SV40 in human tumors and no cancer increase in people who receive the contaminated vaccine. Quote, no one would dispute there's been a widespread, very scary exposure to the population of potentially cancer-causing virus, said Dr. Howard Strickler, NCI's chief investigator. Again quoting, but none of our analyses and other major analyses have shown an inkling of an effect on the population, unquote. As we looked at in For the Record program number 308, in fact, many of the people whose data was used in the study that was overseen by Dr. Strickler disputed his findings very, very strongly, and the procedure that was followed in releasing the report on that research was viewed as highly unorthodox and perhaps, to a certain extent at least, unethical by many of the people that took issue with it and whose data was used. I would also stress, and we're going to come back to this, that the Cancers that Ed Haslam had detected were it had reached epidemic levels, were mostly soft tissue cancers, and that those are different from the cancers that Drs. McKaylee, Carboni, and others, Dr. McKaylee, Carboni, and others have come across. The fact, by the way, that SV40 is not found in a tumor does not mean that it was not caused by SV40. Cellular metabolism would quite possibly get rid of any visible trace of SV40. It might not, but the fact that no SV40 is visibly present in any of the tumors does not mean that the tumors might not have been caused by SV40, and that any visible trace or detectable trace of SV40 would have been dissipated over time by the cellular metabolism. Skipping down in this story, we come across the names of one of three very important and heroic female doctors whose work has been largely ignored by the medical establishment. And in fact, these doctors, and specifically two of them named Bernice Eddy and Sarah Stewart, had discovered the oncogenic effects, cancer-causing effects of SV40 when the poliovirus was first being concocted and warned about it. That caused significant professional harm to both doctors, and sadly their results were overlooked to a large extent. Of Bernice Eddy, William Carlson writes as follows in the Chronicle of 7/22/2001. Skipping down, after discussing the creation of the Salk vaccine, 4 years later, Bernice Eddy, by the way, this time period is 1959, 4 years later, Bernice Eddy, a researcher at the National Institutes of Health, noticed something strange while looking through her microscope. Monkey kidney cells, the same kind used to make the vaccine, were dying without apparent cause. So she tried an experiment. She prepared kidney extracts from 8 to 10 rhesus monkeys and injected tiny amounts under the skin of 23 newborn hamsters. Within 9 months, quote, large malignant subcutaneous tumors appeared on 20 of the animals. That's 20 out of 23. On July 6, 1960, concerned that a monkey virus might be contaminating the polio vaccine, Eddy took her findings to Dr. Joseph Smadel, S-M-A-D-E-L, chief of the NIH's Biologics Division. Smadel dismissed the tumors as harmless, quote, lumps, unquote. The same year, however, at a Merck laboratory in Pennsylvania, Dr. Maurice Hilleman and Dr. Ben Sweet isolated the virus. They called it simian virus 40, or SV40, because it was the 40th virus found in rhesus kidney tissue. That, of course, is the kidneys of rhesus monkeys. Skipping down, after discussing concern on the parts of some of these researchers, William Carlson writes as follows. But U.S. Public Health Service officials were worried. Tests had found SV40 in both the Sabin and Salk vaccines. It was later estimated that as much as a third of the Salk vaccine was tainted, and that SV40 was causing cancer in lab animals. In early 1961, they quietly met with the agency's top vaccine advisors. The agency found no evidence that the virus had been harmful to humans, but in March, the officials ordered manufacturers to eliminate SV40 from all future vaccine. New procedures were adopted to neutralize the tainted poliovirus seed stock, and SV40-free African green monkeys were used to produce the bulk vaccine instead of rhesus monkeys. But officials did not recall contaminated Salk vaccine, more than a year's supply, still in the hands of the nation's doctors. And they did not notify the public of the contamination and SV40's carcinogenic effect on newborn hamsters. Hilleman would later explain that government officials were worried that any potentially negative information could ignite a panic and jeopardize the vaccination campaign. The first public disclosure that the Salk vaccine was contaminated came in the New York Times on July 26, 1961. A story on page 33 reported that Merck and other manufacturers had halted production until they could get a, quote, monkey virus, unquote, out of the vaccine. When asked to comment, the U.S. Public Health Service stressed there was no evidence that the virus was dangerous. By the way, I would add that that would appear to be a less than candid analysis under the circumstances. Skipping down again. By the way, what we're going to do now is to take up with the research of McKaylee Carbone, Dr. McKaylee Carboni, whose work on SV40 was front and center in the February 2000 Atlantic Monthly article about SV40, and whose work has spurred renewed interest in SV40 on the part of numerous researchers. For years, researchers had believed that all SV40 contaminated Salk vaccine made between 1955 and 1963 had been used or discarded. Then, in 1999, Carboni was contacted by a former public health director in Oak Park, Illinois, who said he had 7 sealed vials of vaccine dated October 1955 in a refrigerator in his basement. Carboni, who had left the National Institute of Health and joined the faculty at Loyola University Medical Center, ran tests on the vaccine and made a startling discovery. Not only was the vaccine contaminated, it contained a second form of the virus, an archetypal, unquote, SV40 strain. Although manufacturers switched from rhesus monkeys to SV40-free green African monkeys to grow the bulk vaccine in 1961, they have continued to use potentially contaminated polio seed strains originally grown on the rhesus monkey tissue to start the bulk vaccine process. Manufacturers check the purity of their vaccine with a series of 14-day tests to detect whether any SV40 slipped through. But when Carboni replicated the tests, he found that the second, slower-growing archetypal strain took 19 days to emerge. It was possible, Carboni noted in a published report, that this second strain of SV40 had been evading manufacturers' screening procedures for years and infecting vaccine recipients after 1962. By the way, there are indications that, as we've talked about in numerous past discussions of the SV40, there are indications that the virus may very well be not only sexually communicated, but that it quite possibly can be passed from mothers to children through breastfeeding. And indeed, the prostate and semen and breast milk are two of the human fluids, body fluids, in which SV40 has been found. Skipping down, but the national, after talking about the official National Institute of Health and National Cancer Institute downplaying of SV40, but the National Cancer Institute recently acknowledged that there is evidence to suggest that SV40, quote, may be associated with human cancer, unquote. The NCI statement released last month also said that SV40's interaction with, quote, tumor suppressor proteins, unquote, indicates, again quoting, possible mechanisms that could contribute to the development of cancer, unquote. Top National Cancer Institute officials declined to be interviewed on the record for this report. Fromaney also declined several requests for an interview, that he was one of the top National Institute of Health experts on SV40, and he had downplayed its significance. Continuing, Dr. James Godert, G-O-E-D-E-R-T, the chief of the National Cancer Institute's Viral Epidemiology Branch, who supervised Strickler's work, said that if SV40 is in human tumors, it must be at extremely low levels. To critics who claim the government has downplayed SV40's potential health risks, Godert responded, quote, absolutely not, unquote. He acknowledged that research is needed to resolve the question of whether SV40 is prevalent in the human population, and if so, how it might be spreading. But Godert says he has no plans for such studies. Quote, it's not our highest priority, unquote, he said. By the way, we're going to review information from the July 2001 issue of Penthouse Magazine indicating that privately, a number of doctors associated with the National Institute of Health and the National Cancer Institute are privately aware not only of the potentially devastating effects of SV40, and I believe potentially is not an accurate word, it is devastating, and in fact they're worried about the liability of not only the companies that made the vaccine, but of the government itself in connection with the SV40 and its cancer-causing effects. The article that I just excerpted, as mentioned at the beginning, is from July 15th of the year 2001. There was a follow-up article in the July 22nd, 2001 edition of the San Francisco Chronicle, this also by William Carlson, the Chronicle's science writer. This article is headlined by the Chronicle, New Documents Show the Monkey Virus is Present in More. And the article reads in part as follows. This article reads in part, a monkey virus linked to human cancers may have contaminated the oral polio vaccine for years after the U.S. government ordered manufacturers to remove it, according to drug company documents obtained by the Chronicle. The Chronicle reported last week that the simian virus SV40 had contaminated early polio vaccine given to millions of Americans. When health officials discovered in 1961 that SV40 caused malignant tumors in lab animals, they ordered the virus eliminated from all future vaccine. But internal memos from Lederle Laboratories, the chief producer of polio vaccine in the United States, indicate SV40 may not have been completely removed. According to one memo, SV40 was found in 3 of 15 lots of the oral vaccine 7 months after the federal directive was issued in March of 1961. Lederle released the contaminated vaccine to the public anyway, the memo shows. The documents also suggest that the company failed to test the monkey kidney seed strains used to make the bulk polio vaccine for contamination, despite a written warning from Dr. Albert Sabin, who developed the oral vaccine. And I will give you the full title of this article. I only saved, for purposes of the present recording, this one page. In the second half of the article, second half of the broadcast, I'll give you the full title of this article. It's on page A6 and A7 of the Chronicle from 7/22/2001. So this particular article indicates, here's the full title. I've got this behind another one. Forgive my over-the-counter radio here. Full title of the article is, "New Documents Show the Monkey Virus is Present in More Recent Polio Vaccine." And this, obviously, speaks for itself. It indicates the possibility that the SV40 contamination continued well after it was officially detected and cured. I would also note that there's been a recent lawsuit by someone in Los Angeles whose 2.5-year-old son died of a brain tumor that later tested positive for SV40. That lawsuit discussed in the article, skipping down. Last year, a lawsuit was filed in Los Angeles against Lederle, that was the manufacturer of the vaccine, by the parents of 2.5-year-old Alexander Horwin, H-O-R-W-I-N, who died of a brain tumor that later tested positive for SV40. The suit claims that the tumor was caused by SV40 and that he became infected through a 1997 oral polio vaccine. And there are a number of other lawsuits as well, by the way, and the potential liability of the National Institutes of Health has been a major cause of concern for a number of different researchers who have gone on record as saying that they're unconvinced of the carcinogenic effects of SV40, and yet privately they indicate a concern about possible liability. Much of the second half of this program is going to be occupied by a reading of some excerpts from the most recent edition of Ed Haslam's Vitally Important, Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus. However, I'm going to do the best I can in the minutes remaining in this side to give a synopsis of some of the major points that Ed Haslam has discussed in his Vitally Important book. In the first place, the research that he began doing into SV40, as I mentioned, is inextricably linked with the career of Dr. Mary Sherman. Dr. Mary Sherman was murdered in 1964, and she was an associate of David Ferry. David Ferry was a U.S. intelligence operative and the original principal focus of Jim Garrison's investigation in New Orleans, and an individual at the House Select Committee on Assassinations mentioned should be investigated in connection with the Kennedy assassination. David Ferry was part of the central New Orleans connections to the Kennedy assassination, and he had a paper, a cancer treatise, in his apartment that was found by investigators after his alleged suicide, which took place on the eve of his being indicted by Jim Garrison. Let me stress again, this is a very complicated hypothesis, and I don't profess to be able to do justice to it in just a couple of minutes. Again, for the record, program number 19 is a 3-hour discussion with Ed Haslam about the details concerning his research, and for the record, program 62, 63, and 76 are follow-up interviews with Ed Haslam. There's discussion of SV40 in a number of different programs, including 198, 199, and 282, as well as the aforementioned 308. One of the central New Orleans connections to Lee Harvey Oswald and the assassination of President Kennedy concerned a New Orleans-based right-wing intelligence service with strong connections to elements of military intelligence and elements of the CIA. That was called INCA, which is an acronym for the Information Council of the Americas. The driving force behind that was also one of the driving forces in American medicine in the first half of the 20th century, and that was Dr. Alton Ochsner, O-C-H-S-N-E-R. Ochsner is a former head of the National American Cancer Society, and an individual who has had a great deal of influence within the American health establishment. And the Information Council of the Americas was basically founded by Dr. Alton Ochsner. One of its principal operatives was a guy named Ed Butler, and Inca sponsored an interview in which Ed Butler interviewed Lee Harvey Oswald on WDSU in New Orleans in the summer of 1963. That interview, by the way, is actually replayed in part one of The Guns of November, as well as in a follow-up broadcast for the record broadcast on the Kennedy assassination. In that interview, Lee Harvey Oswald, among other things, proclaimed his communist sympathies, and that interview, as I mentioned earlier in the program, was played all over the United States in the immediate aftermath of Kennedy's assassination, and many analysts of the assassination believe that it led many people to cover up the assassination for fear that if the public in this country perceived that a popular president had been killed by the communists, that it could lead to a Third World War. In turn, Ed Haslam's research linked Ed Butler and Inca with Guy Bannister, Guy Bannister Detective Agency not only employed the aforementioned David Ferry, but also had strong contact with Lee Harvey Oswald in the months and years leading up to the assassination. In fact, Lee Harvey Oswald's pro-Castro organization shared an address with the Bannister Detective Agency, which was functioning as an epicenter for, among other things, the anti-Castro effort of the U.S. intelligence community in the New Orleans area. And again, in Ed Haslam's book, he connects Bannister, Butler, Ochsner, and also Clay Shaw was part of the same milieu. He was ultimately tried by Jim Garrison. As I mentioned, when David Ferry, quote, committed suicide, unquote, investigators found a cancer treatise in his apartment. He also had a number of mice, white mice, that were apparently being used for cancer research. He had some in his apartment, but even more in an adjacent building that he was apparently renting in conjunction with some of his anti-Castro Cuban associates. In turn, Ed Haslam has developed research which indicates that Alton Ochsner, the aforementioned Dr. Mary Sherman, who was murdered just before the Warren Commission came to New Orleans to investigate the New Orleans connections, or, quote, investigate, unquote, the New Orleans connections to the Kennedy assassination, Ochsner and Dr. Mary Sherman were linked to what Ed Haslam has, very convincingly documented, was an effort to use a linear particle accelerator to mutate SV40 in order to produce a mutant variant of SV40 that could be used to develop a vaccine to inoculate the American people against the cancer that had been mistakenly injected into them or had been vectored into them as a result of the contaminated polio vaccine. And again, I realize that this is a very complex hypothesis. I refer listeners to Ed's book and or the aforementioned For the Record number 19 for details. In turn, Ed Haslam has linked the attempts to mutate the SV40 using a linear particle accelerator to not only genetic engineering research, some of which may have been used for biological warfare purposes, but also to the possible development of the AIDS virus, and perhaps even more importantly, to a soft tissue cancer epidemic currently affecting the American people. And again, I can appreciate that I'm not perhaps doing justice to this very complex and vitally important hypothesis that Ed has presented. That's why I did the 3-hour interview in 1996, and that's why I recommend that people get a hold of Ed's book. I've alluded to other broadcasts on this subject. Those are available from a tape and CD duplication service called Spitfire, Spitfire. You can reach them at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email them at mail@spitfirelist.com. You can visit the website for Spitfire at spitfirelist.com. And sister station WFMU-FM has been archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent broadcasts, including For the Record 269, containing an interview with Ed Haslam, are available on WFMU.org/Dave Emery. There is a longer URL with other Real Audio For the Record files that are available for downloading only, and there are links in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website to both WFMU sites. That concludes Side A of For the Record program number 316. Update on the politics of SV 40. This is being recorded on July 22nd of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.